From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. It hasn't been quite the case this past year, of course, with 2020 and the coronavirus, but I've often enjoyed traveling around the United States and around the world to explore those miraculous places, those places of mysteries and marvels, which might not even qualify as miracles, but are still interesting nonetheless. And we've got a great book for you today for people who are interested in perhaps getting in their car and traveling around the United States and checking out some of the places of miracles here in the States. You don't even have to travel anywhere exotic, but we'll be going to talk to Marion Amberg. She's the author of a brand new book called Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. And so those are some of the great places of Catholic shrines throughout the United States, and some of those places where there have been miracles claimed and even investigated, and some that I've been to myself and I think are absolutely amazing. So we'll be talking today with Marion about that. And for people who actually want to spread their wings a little bit and get out of the United States, I'm actually planning a trip to France. I'll be going there October 18th through 27th to see all the Marian sites of France. And it's actually in this great year because in 2021 is the 175th anniversary of Our Lady of La Salette, and also Our Lady of Pontmain as 150th anniversary, all in this 2021 year. So we'll be seeing all, of course, the places like Lourdes and Place of the Miraculous Medal, and we'll even be stopping by Lisieux, for example, to see the place of St. Therese. But this will be a great trip, October 18th through 27th. And the best news of all is that the European Union has just opened up the United States for traveling to Europe. So that trip will be, if you're double vaccinated, you'll be able to go. And so people can sign up at nativitypilgrimage.com/miraclehunter for that. So I'm excited to go to France. And later in today's program, we'll be talking about what I consider to be the gold standard of Marian apparitions, and that is, of course, Our Lady of Fatima. May 13th is that big feast day that we celebrate every year of those most famous of all modern Marian apparitions. And there was a great movie that came out last year, and I think it was intended to be out on the anniversary, but with coronavirus hitting the world, movie theaters weren't places that people were gathering, so they actually pushed it back a little bit to October, but they're re-releasing it again in May. And we're going to be talking with Natasha Howes, who is the producer of that incredible film, Fatima. So for people who love that film, for people who didn't get a chance to see it, this will be a great interview to inspire you to check it out. It's really one of the modern masterpieces when it comes to Christian cinematography. So stay tuned for that interview. And we'll be looking, of course, at the 365 Days with Mary project like we always do. And today is the anniversary of Our Lady of Luján, which in Argentina, starting in 1630, is Pope Francis's favorite Marian title from his homeland. So we'll be excited to talk about her later in the show. And we'll also be looking at the question of the week. It's a really good one, and I have a good answer for it. The question is there a saint whose patron is for ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease? So we've got a great answer for you on that one as well. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovich from Bayonne, New Jersey. And for people who watch They Might Be Saints on EWTN, my program that airs on Mondays at 10 a.m. Eastern or 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Fridays, she's one of the episodes that we did in one of my absolute favorite ones, her miracle related to little Michael Mentzer, who was blind, and through an intercession with her relic and prayers, he regained his eyesight, and it was absolutely amazing to film that story. So she is the might-be saint of the day with her feast day today, and so we'll be telling you just a little bit about her incredible life. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week. We look at the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And oftentimes we relate on things that have a connection to Guadalupe or Lourdes or Fatima or some other miraculous location, but aren't a miracle themselves. And so today we've got some of the more interesting types of miracle news, which is a miracle that has in fact happened. And this isn't a new miracle. For those people who have been to Naples, perhaps in September for the feast day of St. Januarius, or on a couple of other times in a year, you might get to see this remarkable occurrence. And so the blood of St. Januarius, as it was reported, who's the patron of southern Italian city Naples, liquefied on Sunday. And so the Naples Archdiocese announced that the miraculous event took place at 5:18 p.m. local time on May 2nd. And so you can actually go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. I've got the video posted that they put up on YouTube showing the Monsignor displaying the reliquary, and he turns it sideways to demonstrate that the blood inside a spherical ampule has turned from solid to liquid state. And so during this miracle, which you probably have heard me talk about on the show before, there's sort of a dried colored mass that's confined to one side of the reliquary, but it on certain feast days, it actually turns to liquid and covers the entire glass. And the crowds that gather for these things, for these events, are amazing. I'm not sure what the crowds are like these days in coronavirus times, but when I was there a couple of years ago, it was almost like gathering for a big football or a soccer game, as it might be in Italy. I mean, the crowds were tremendous. And when the blood turns to liquid, it's a cheer as loud as a game-winning touchdown, because the people of Naples are celebrating it because it's a portent of a good year. When it doesn't liquefy, however, they get very nervous, because those have been cases of earthquakes or volcanoes like Vesuvius exploding, or financial collapse, or pandemics and things of this nature. And so it did not liquefy in December of last year. So this was kind of a big deal. They felt that they're perhaps leaving the pandemic behind this year. So it was an amazing thing. And it was a great thing to see, that blood of St. Januarius liquefying again. So you can connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, where you can read more about this very strange phenomenon, one of the more strange and interesting miracle stories that we have happening in our modern Catholic Church. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week, where we look at a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that gets the right answer. People who know me, my friends, know that perhaps in non-coronavirus times, you might find me in a bar playing pub trivia. I love trivia, and we've got Catholic trivia for you on this show. And so last week, we had a question. We talked with Michael Lichens, about the book Carlo Acutis, Millennial in Paradise, who was one of the youngest people ever beatified by Pope Francis. He died, I believe, at age 15 from leukemia. And so the question is, who was the youngest American beatified by Pope Francis? And Father Michael McGivney, he was in his 30s when he died, so he was one of the youngest. But Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic, whose feast day just happens to be today, was beatified at the age of 24. And of course, we featured her on an episode of They Might Be Saints. People can check out theymightbesaints.com for more information on when her episode will be airing on the program. And so she was the answer to that question at the age of 24. And thanks for everybody who wrote in with the correct answer. Now, this week, the question is, we are talking about Fatima. And so, which of the three visionaries of Our Lady of Fatima were present at the apparition of the Angel of Portugal? So, again, that question is, which of the three visionaries of Our Lady of Fatima were present at the apparition of the Angel of Portugal? And that's kind of an interesting one. Not everybody knows that there was a vision of an angel before those famous visions of the Virgin Mary. So we're wondering about which visionaries were there for that. So if you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe you'll be the person with the fastest answer. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Marian Amberg about some of the great monuments, marvels, and miracles found right here in the United States. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. One of the great parts about my job is that I get to not only talk about miracles on the radio and write books about them, but I also get to travel to some very interesting places around the United States and around the world. And there's a great new book that just came out from our Sunday visitor that I was so excited to see this release because this was right up my alley. It's called Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, A Traveler's Guide to Catholic America. And that's by Marion Amberg. And it's a great book that goes state by state in some ways and talks about some of the great miraculous things or monuments that, to our Catholic Church and otherwise in marvelous places all around the United States. So people could take a road trip if they really wanted to see and explore some of these incredible places. Well, we're so excited today to have the author of that book, Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, on our show today, and that's Marion Amberg. Welcome back to the show today, Marion.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This was this is a fun book. I'm so glad you put this together. I think that this is something that I get emails all the time about what miracles or marvels are happening throughout the United States. And you've got a whole book that's dedicated to them about this. What inspired you to put this book together?
You know, that's kind of a God writes straight with crooked lines. About 2017, a Midwestern publishing house asked me to put together a book proposal, and I said, well, how about holy sites? Unfortunately, they discontinued their trade book line, and here I was with a book proposal. So I sent it to Our Sunday Visitor. They grabbed it, and it's a perfect match because Our Sunday Visitor is all about America and the Catholic Church, and this book is all American and all Catholic. So it's a perfect match.
Wonderful. Yeah, this is an exciting thing because I like how you organize it in the table of contents, even how you have it by state so people can go to their state or a state that they're visiting to see some of the places that might be worth checking out. And so when we talk about marvels, we talk about monuments, we talk about miracles, what are the types of things that this book covers?
Well, it covers a lot of culture. One of the great things about the U.S. is that we are a melting pot. And, of course, with that comes a Catholic melting pot of the different ethnicities, Greek, German, Irish, Sicilian, Italian. And so some of those traditions are still taking place across the country today. And many of these shrines, many of the sites in the book have a ethnic-related aspect to them. And then the book also covers a lot of American history, American Catholic history. For example, the English settlers who came in 1634 and landed in Maryland. In New Mexico, we have churches, parishes that were founded in 1598 and 1610. So there's this history all over the country, and little snippets of it pop up here and there in these different sites.
And I know that there are places of miracles or even just places of marvels that you document in this book. And one of the fun ones from my point of view is the Grasshopper Chapel in Minnesota. Tell us a little bit about what happened in that case.
Oh, I love this place. I grew up about 100 miles from the Grasshopper Chapel. That's the nickname. The formal name is Assumption Chapel. It's in Cold Spring, Minnesota, in the west central part of the state. And during the mid-1870s, there was a horrible locust plague that really descended upon the whole middle section of the country. Well, in Cold Spring, you know, the farmers lost everything, and there was a saying that the locusts, the grasshoppers, ate everything but the mortgage. So the parish priest inspired the parishioners there to build a chapel to Maria Hilp, which stands for Maria Help. And as soon as they started building this wooden chapel in July 16th, 1877, as soon as they began construction, the locusts took off. And the Smithsonian Institution has declared the Rocky Mountain locust to be extinct. So it's a great story of people's faith and how Mary answered their prayers.
Wonderful. And you talk about monuments and shrines in this book, and the name of the book is Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. We're talking today with Marion Amberg, the author. And one of those shrines or places is is related to St. Joseph in Missouri. Tell us a little bit about what caught your attention about this shrine there.
What caught my attention about this shrine is that there was a miracle that happened there around, oh my golly, I'm guessing around 1860 or so. And there was a factory worker who accidentally struck himself with a piece of metal. He got infected, and the doctors gave him up for dead. Well, he heard that there was a parish mission going on at this church, so he went. He was blessed with a relic of Blessed Peter Claver, and he miraculously recovered. Now, this miracle eventually led to the canonization of Peter Claver himself.
There are very few miracles from the United States that actually factor into foreign sainthood causes, so that's a beautiful thing. And one of my favorite places that you document in this book, Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, relates to the Chapel Chimayo in New Mexico. And that's a place that I've visited in the past, and it's a place where they call the Lourdes of the Southwest because instead of holy water, they have holy dirt that has been involved in some pretty remarkable healings. What can you tell us about the Chapel Chimayo in your state of New Mexico?
Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful healing site. Many, many, many healings have been reported there. What happened is on Good Friday in 1810, there was a man there were a group of penitentes, and they're dedicated to the sufferings of Christ. And so they were up in the little mountains, the little hills around Chimayo, and they were praying, doing their penances on Good Friday night. And this one gentleman, he saw a light down by the river, down by the Santa Cruz River. So he ran down towards the light. The light was coming from under the ground. He dug into the dirt, and he found a crucifix of Jesus. So he summoned all the other penitentes, and they came running, and they were just astounded at what they had found. So they got together, and they went over to a neighboring parish and got the priest, and he put it in that church. But then the crucifix disappeared. It would always show up back at the original hole where it was found in Chimayo. So the people decided that's where God wanted that crucifix to be. So they built a little adobe chapel, and to this day, people go to this little adobe chapel, and they get holy dirt. It's been blessed by a priest. It comes from the very hole where that crucifix was found more than 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I think it's one of the more remarkable miracle sites in the United States. If you go and visit, you can see the photos and the crutches of all the people who have come there over the years, and they've been healed in a special way at that place, at the Santuario Chimayo in New Mexico. And of course, in New Mexico, you also have that Loreto Chapel built by legend, according to St. Joseph. So that's another place that people can check out in New Mexico. And so we're talking today with Marian Amberg, author of Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles from Our Sunday Visitor. And in the book, where there are 500 sites or so documented or highlighted in these chapters, for people who pick up this book and kind of want to learn about the different miraculous things throughout the United States or marvelous places, how would you recommend that people use this book? What was your intent for how they could access these different places?
Oh, it can be used in a variety of ways. One of the first things I wanted people to do is hit the road and go visit these sites for themselves. They're marvelous stories of faith, just absolutely marvelous. So that was the primary thing. Second of all, the book can actually be used at home. You know, if you can't travel to these places, most of the websites, and the websites are given in the book, have really good interior photos of these respective churches. So you can do a virtual visit to these places. And then another reason for writing the book is parishes or families who are tutoring, teaching their kids at home, they can use this as a resource to learn more about Catholicism in the U.S. You know, for example, learn more about where the first Catholic English founders arrived in Maryland. Or they can learn about the Spanish. You know, they were in Florida in 1565. They were in New Mexico 1598 and founded the parish here. So there's many different ways this can be used. It can also be used just for reading entertainment, because so many of these places have unique stories behind them, little tidbits that are quite fascinating. So it can be used in a variety of ways.
Wonderful. Well, we're so excited to have this book out on the shelves now. That's Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles, and that's from Marian Amberg and our Sunday visitor. Thank you so much, Marian, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
God bless. That was Marian Amberg, author of this new book, Monuments, Marvels, and Miracles. Check this one out. You can see the remarkable places in your state, or next time you are going out for a trip, maybe you can stop by and do some miracle hunting of your own. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. One of my favorite parts of my job, and I almost don't even consider it a job because this is a lot of fun to be able to explore and write about and travel to see miracles, is answering the questions that people have about miracles. I have the luxury of being able to dedicate my life to this study, and so I've come across quite a few things, and people want to know what I've seen and what I've heard. And so we have a question this week, and I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world. And when I speak at speaking engagements at parishes and conferences, I give about 20 to 25 in a normal year. People ask me their questions at the end of the talk, and I have a lot of fun with that. And the question for today is from Pat. She says, Miracle Hunter, God bless you in your ministry of Miracle Hunter. I listen to you on Holy Family Radio in Ohio. I didn't hear your whole statement of praying for a miracle on a recent show. My brother was recently diagnosed with ALS, and we are praying for a miracle. Is there a patron saint for ALS? I couldn't find one. We are praying to Father McGivney for this miracle. Is it okay to pray to other saints as well for a miracle? As I said, I didn't hear your whole statement on this. Thank you for what you do and for answering this question. Blessings in Christ, Pat. Well, thanks, Pat, for your question. You have a couple of questions embedded in there, and perhaps we answered a similar question on a previous show, but it's an important one because people will often ask, can you only pray to just one saint? And of course, the answer is no. You can pray to all your friends, the saints, like I do when I'm in trouble, when I need help. I'm calling on everyone who I've got a close connection to spiritually, and so hoping that somebody will intercede for me. And so so don't limit yourself to just one saint or to future saints or to the saints who are needing of a miracle, perhaps. Would they be the ones most likely to work one? I'm not quite sure how that works, but if you are looking to help in a sainthood cause, then you have to tune into what the rules are. So when it comes to sainthood causes that are considered in Rome, and there are 10,000 saints around the world that have been pushed ahead on that path to sainthood from servant of God, venerable, blessed, to saint, and there's as many as 2,000 open sainthood causes existing in Rome as we speak right now. So there's lots to choose from. But if you're looking to help in that process to show the intercessory power of a given saint, you should be praying to just one saint. And so in this case, you were wondering about praying to Michael McGivney or another saint. Yes, you could pray to him and multiple saints, but if you were trying to help the cause of Michael McGivney, and he's a blessed, so he needs a second miracle, you should direct your prayers and ask everyone in your family and friends to direct their prayers to Michael McGivney. Because in the case that your brother were cured, you'd submit that miracle to the canonization cause there in Connecticut, and they'd send it to Rome. And if Rome were to say, well, it looks like they prayed to a bunch of different saints, we can't tell if it was just Michael McGivney alone or Michael McGivney and a bunch of his saintly friends, then they'll say this is a wonderful miracle story, but we cannot use it for the canonization cause. So focus your prayers to just one, a potential saint, and that's a venerable or a blessed who could use that miracle in the sainthood cause. And so your more important question, however, was, is there a patron saint for ALS? And there is a great future saint for that, and that's Father Aloysius, or Father Al Schwartz. And we did a program on him on They Might Be Saints. He's a priest from Washington, D.C., who set up homes for children all around the world, in Korea, in Mexico, and otherwise in the Philippines. And so hundreds of thousands of children have gone through his programs, and it's really an amazing thing, a true miracle, in my opinion. But Father Al died from ALS, so he is a great saint to turn to for those people who have ALS and are seeking a cure. So I encourage you to look up the story of Father Al Schwartz. World Villages of Children is the website, and you can also pray to him for the intercession of a healing miracle for your brother. So thanks, Pat, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary. We do this every week, where we look at the Marian devotion that lines up to the day's date. And believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for every single day of the calendar year. We know Fatima, which is coming up on May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or my personal favorite, Our Lady of Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day in the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got Our Lady of Luján from Argentina in the year 1630. And this is Pope Francis's favorite Argentinian Marian devotion. So this is a good one to tune into. And the story goes that around the year 1630, when a man from Portugal was transporting the statue and his mules, they stopped on the shores of the Luján River. And he left it with a slave who more than 40 years was its guardian, building a brick chapel for many pilgrims who came to venerate it. And it was later moved to the location where it currently resides. And in 1887, a basilica was built on that spot. And among the popes who have honored Our Lady of Luján are Clement XI, Clement XIV, Pius VI, Pius IX, Leo XIII, Pius XI, Pius XII, and John Paul II and Pope Francis. They both personally bestowed a golden rose on the statue of Our Lady of Luján. And so that's today's devotion, May 8th, Our Lady of Luján from Argentina in 1630. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the project at 365dayswithmary.com. You can download the free app on the Apple App Store, or you can go to 365 Days with Mary Facebook page and join any of the 10,000 other followers who honor Mary each and every day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We try to report on those things related to future sainthood causes, and that's in connection with my program, They Might Be Saints, people who are on that path to sainthood. And so there was exciting news for people who were followers of those blesseds who are being elevated to sainthood, because Pope Francis presided at a consistory for the canonization of blesseds. And so the ordinary public consistory took place at 10 a.m. on May 3rd in the consistory hall of the Apostolic Palace in the Vatican, with cardinals currently resident in or visiting Rome. And the vote is the very last step in the process of canonization, and it kind of sets the dates for the masses of canonization. So everything is kind of going to happen no matter what, but this is a formality where they set the dates when the canonizations will happen. So the Vatican did not announce the date for the date or location of the canonizations on Monday, but it did give a reason for the omission, and it's likely due to the organizing during a pandemic. They need more time. And so Vatican News said that seven candidates would be raised to the altars in the coming weeks and months, according to a schedule to be set at a future time. And the most prominent figure among those seven is Charles de Foucauld, the French missionary killed in Algeria in 1916. He was a soldier, explorer, Catholic revert, priest, hermit, and religious brother, and he served the Tuareg people in the Sahara Desert in Algeria. And so his canonization was approved. We announced that way back in May of 2020. And so the other canonization causes were announced as well. Maria Francesca of Jesus, foundress of the Capuchin Tertiary Sisters of Luano, Blessed Maria Domenica Motivani, the co-foundress and general superior of the Institute of the Little Sisters of the Holy Family. And so they also did several others as well. So big news for seven future saints, which will be distributed throughout this year and scheduled in the weeks to come. Let's look at the might-be saint of the day. We look at people who are miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. And these are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And so this lines up with my television program, which airs on Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time or Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, where we look at Americans on the path to sainthood. And today is one of the feast days of one of my favorite might-be saints, and that is Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. And we did a program on her as one of the series. And so check out theymightbesaints.com to find out more about her story as well. So she was born on March 26th in 1901 in Bayonne, New Jersey. And she was one of five children born to Alexander and Johanna Demjanovic, who were immigrants to the United States from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, sort of modern-day Slovakia, I suppose it is. And she was raised in the Byzantine Ruthenian Rite, and she later actually came across to the Roman Rite. She was quite smart, the valedictorian of her high school class. She was a teacher at the St. Aloysius Academy in Jersey City, and then in the public high school there. And she entered the congregation of the Sisters of Charity of St. Elizabeth, great sisters. I really enjoyed speaking with them when we did this series in 1925. And she died just 2 years later. And in 1928, Sister Miriam's spiritual conferences, Greater Perfection, were published all over the world, and they focus on the universal call to holiness, which is a concept that was truly ahead of her time. Now, she died on May 8, 1927, in Convent Station, New Jersey, of complications following appendicitis and periodontitis, and she's venerated. She was declared venerable by Pope Benedict, later beatified by Pope Francis, and the beatification, which was celebrated in Newark, New Jersey, was the very first beatification on American soil. So that's the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. And for more information on the might-be saint of the day or any of the other future saints in the program, They Might Be Saints, check out theymightbesaints.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Natasha Howes, the producer of the film Fatima, which will be back in theaters this May. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who have been to my website, miraclehunter.com, and who tune into this show know that we talk a lot about Marian apparitions, but we refer to one above the others as the gold standard of Marian apparitions, and that, of course, is Fatima. Those apparitions happening in 1917 to the three shepherd children of Fatima, two of whom have been declared saints as of 2017. And I was so excited about a film that was several years in the making that was released last year. I believe it was released digitally in August of last year due to coronavirus. But now it's in theaters in the right way to see this thing. So this is one of my all-time favorite faith films that's ever been made. And it's a beautiful thing. The Miracle of the Sun, seeing that on the big screen will be a great opportunity for those people who have not yet seen it in theaters. And so we're so excited today to talk about this film, Fatima, with the producer. And that's Natasha Howes. Welcome back to the show today, Natasha.
Thank you so much for bringing me back, Michael. I'm really, really pleased to be able to speak to you again about this incredible movie and this incredible opportunity as the movie is re-released back into theaters to actually be able to experience and witness the miracle on the big screen. Thank you.
That's right. And I think when we talk about miracles in, on this show and otherwise, miracles is all we talk about. But when people ask, what's the greatest modern-day miracle, the answer oftentimes that people turn to is Fatima, or the miracle of the son of Fatima. So seeing it on the big screen will be, as you say, a miraculous moment for viewers around the United States. And so talk to us a little bit about how this came to be. I know it was digitally released back last year amidst all the chaos, but what kind of inspired this decision to push it to the big screen now?
Well, clearly, I mean, obviously, the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima is May 13th. It's also the Day of the Ascension. May is the month of Mary and the date that, obviously, as Catholics, we all celebrate the month of Mary. And so this decision was really came about through Picture House, Bob and Jeannie Burney. And they saw this as a phenomenal opportunity to readdress the opportunity to really take this back to the big screen so that we can really celebrate this movie, this story, this human story behind the miracle and the apparition together again, and to witness the miracle. And AMC Theatres were particularly behind this decision and a great supporter of the film, really right from the beginning. And as you say, it was a little bit of turmoil and chaos last year. We took the plunge and decided and chose to release at the height of the pandemic. And we released in August, and that was actually in some theaters and also on premium video on demand. And at that time, the theater openings were a little sporadic. There was a lot of theater closures. And the theater regulations were such that they were sort of in a state of development to start embracing new models of release. And so we really did kind of push very hard towards a digital release during August last year, because we really, really, there was a big call, there was a big drive and a hunger to experience this story of hope during a very, you know, trying time. And so whilst we actually went through the full cycle of sort of a digital release all the way through to January, this opportunity to enable people to, you know, as we're kind of moving beyond that initial lockdown, as things are starting to open up, a real opportunity for people to come together again, to experience and celebrate the miracle, the apparitions, together again in theatres. And part of the beauty of this is that you can actually go in and literally, you know, have a private, book a private screening within a theatre for just your family and friends. A lot of the theatres are still operating at 25 to 50% of their capacity. And so it really does give you an opportunity to watch the film in the environment in which it was created. I mean, this film really is cinematic. The experience, the witness of the apparitions, the miracle itself, it's cinematic, and it's a cinematic score with Bocelli singing the original song, and Gratia Plena. And so it really is an experience for a big screen experience that we really hope people will embrace, and that's fans of the film. And this is also an opportunity, actually, because, of course, it's Mother's Day on Sunday for viewers, for families to come together to really experience the miracle and to celebrate the Great Mother, to celebrate, you know, the Blessed Mother herself.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Natasha House about the film Fatima. And I've seen this film myself. It's absolutely beautiful. And I'm so excited that it will be in theaters now in May for people to see, 350 theaters throughout the United States. And Natasha, when you've worked on various Fatima projects for many years, and this same challenge comes up, I'm sure, when you're making this film that everybody knows this story of Fatima. So you've got all the Fatima, quote-unquote, experts who have their opinions of how it should be done or what really happened, what the facts were, what they weren't. And then you want to tell a new story that opens up to, people's eyes to Fatima in a new way. How did you navigate that challenge?
I mean, we actually worked very closely with the Shrine of Fatima from the very beginning. And so part of the navigation of that challenge was to ensure that this a new approach, which is very much the human story behind the stories of the miracle and the apparition, I think one of the keys that we kind of drove towards was really trying to embrace the opportunity for people to experience the apparitions, the miracle from the position on the perspective of the children and the doubters and the community themselves. So we really try to offer a depth of character to each of the individual agents within the film, because we thought it was very important for us as viewers and for people who are fans or are, you know, already know the story from a deep place, to be able to sort of open new doors to understanding. So rather than kind of go with what is the accepted sort of canonical story of, you know, the six apparitions, there's so much more to this story and so much depth behind each of the character and each of those individual experiences. And that really does open the door to an understanding of it. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that, you know, two of the children have been sated, and now there is the process of canonization for Sister Lucia that's currently underway. And this really does open the door to that opportunity of understanding that, you know, saints are also, you know, flawed humans as well. And, you know, we are all sort of, giving us the opportunity to really experience that human experience and to have that elevation of the wonder of the apparition and the brevity of the fact that these children were charged with carrying this message of peace to the world at such a young age. So that was a challenge, but also an incredible opportunity and platform to open the door to these new stories. And that was very much then sanctioned with the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima in Portugal, who we brought on board at a very early stage. And they actually provided us with an advisory committee to help us to navigate those challenges and also to dig down and find out and be able to relay new stories behind this story as well. So we were offered, you know, the sort of the archives of this story into each of the human elements behind it.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Natasha Howes about the film Fatima. It's out in theaters now, 350 theaters throughout the United States, just in time for Mother's Day and the feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And so this is an exciting thing that this is out. And when I watched the film, my opinions of it were that it was really a smart move to use this vehicle of Harvey Keitel as a journalist or investigator to tease out the story. He interacts with Sister Lucia of Fatima in an older age in this film. How did you feel that you needed to address skeptics or people open their hearts to Fatima or learn about Fatima? How did you decide to use Harvey Keitel to sort of mirror what some people who might not believe in Fatima might be approaching the film with?
Well, most interestingly, and as we actually found out later, if it's the Harvey Keitel character, Professor Nichols, that you're referring to, it really was a narrative device, as you say, to be able to bring the story of Fatima much to the modern day, to use the narrative as a platform to really kind of flesh out and bring to life those skeptical positions and a lot of the intellectual questions that people have had around the miracle and the apparitions and the experiences of the children. So this trajectory of using two different time epochs, one which is much closer to our contemporary lived experience today, really did provide that as an opportunity to add more of an intellectual flavor to what is then to make sense of the children's experiences from 1917. And so we have that wonderful interplay of dialogue between the Professor Nichols and Sister Lucia character from the convent cell in Coimbra. And so, in fact, Harvey Keitel was a phenomenal choice of actor for the role. And most intriguingly, his birthday is also May the 13th. And so there was a real synchronicity of the choice and the casting of actors for this that specific role. And particularly because he has, you know, a very attuned interest in the spiritual world, and so, and especially in the intellectual spiritual world. And so, you know, he really worked very, very closely with Marco Ponte Corvo, the director and the writer as well, one of the writers of the movie, to really kind of flesh out the kind of questions as a skeptic that he felt the world, or we feel the world, really wants to know. And part of that is, you know, well, why you? Why a child? Why would, you know, why would the Mother of God appear to a child of all people? And it's just very intriguing that the sort of the answers that Sister Lucia gives are very much from a human perspective. And that's a human perspective of people, somebody who's had a real deep interaction with Mother of God.
Wonderful. Well, we're so excited to see this film back out in the theaters. It is out now to 350 theaters nationwide. People can see and experience the miracle for themselves of Fatima. And we're so grateful to you, Natasha Howes, the producer of this great film, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much. And may I please put in, it is in AMC theaters, and for anybody who would love to watch and to watch with a group, please go to the fatimathemovie.com website where you can see all of the theaters that it's currently available.
Wonderful. God bless. And that was Natasha Howes, the producer of the film Fatima. I encourage you to check this one out. If you have not seen it, I really believe it is one of the truly great films in the Christian genre. And it's you know, if you don't know Our Lady of Fatima, you'll get to know her in a big way with this beautiful film. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, search for Miracle Hunter, and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guest, Marian Amberg, for telling us about the monuments, marvels, and miracles found in the United States and in her new book from our Sunday visitor. And also Natasha Howes, the producer of Fatima, that beautiful film that's back in theaters again, celebrating the greatest of all Marian apparitions. If you're looking to get out of the country, and I know that I am, you can join me on a trip to France this October. I'll be going October 18th through 27th on a pilgrimage to see the Marian Shrines of France, including Pontmain, which is celebrating this year the 150th anniversary of the apparitions there, and La Salette, which is celebrating the anniversary of the apparitions there as well, 175th. Of course, we'll be going to Lourdes and to see the Miraculous Medal location. We'll be going to see Paris and Lisieux and other places. Check it out at nativitypilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. Should be a great trip. Sign up for the newsletter on miraclehunter.com for more information on miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and more. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.